Radio.
Everybody, wanted y'all to hear a little bit of music. I hope it played well through our limited technology that we have. But this is Kay's Son and Friends, formerly known as Kay Thompson Live. I'm Kay's son, Citizen Payne, bringing the friends in a minute. Legendary newsman Wayne Gilman and the one and only fantastic historian Byron Saunders. You know, we're going back to work, everybody. We're reopening. The country is reopening. At least some of it is going to reopen. And that is the thing. I got one question for the people out there that want to protest, even though there's a minuscule percentage of the people that think that way. Who's going to work when everybody gets sick? It's kind of like the egg before the cart thing, right? The egg before the chicken thing, right? Who's going to work when everybody gets sick? Meaning you go to work, you want to go to work. You want to exercise your right to go to work, but then your neighbor next to you is sick, so they get you sick, and you can't go to work to make the money that you wanted to go back to work, and you protest. So I'm not understanding. I don't understand right now. And this goes back to my personal thought, is that we can't let everybody vote no more. That's not intelligent enough to understand the ramifications of their decisions. That's called a child or someone or an elderly, one of our elderly relatives that might not be able to have all their faculties anymore, and you have to make the decisions for them. Those aren't responsible people because of their youth, their age, or a disability or challenge of some sort. Everybody else in between, you ain't got no excuse for not being educated about the process, about the facts, not understanding. I do kind of understand why some people want to reject these particular facts, because they have a different kind of objective than everybody else that asks the questions. How can they reject these facts? Because their objective is different. Like I've been saying for these weeks, like me and the brothers have been talking about, their objective, I think for me, the Republicans and Trump, their objective is to limit the number of votes that the Democrats can get. I'm just going to come out and say it. To me, I can only judge by their actions. Their objective is to kill off black and brown people. And I'm not going by just the actions of the recent past 6 months. I'm going by actions of 400 years of data. So I think that I can speak from somewhat of a secure foundation and factual foundation. I'm going to bring the brothers in here. Let's go with Brother Byron Saunders and get his thought on a couple of things here, see what he thinks about what's going on. What's going on, Byron?
Well, grace and peace, my friend. Tough week last week. I lost a couple of dear, dear close friends. And
okay, Byron, let me interrupt you real quick. We got spotty reception from you. You want to try and hit us back real quick so we can clear that up?
Sure.
You're being lost a little bit. I don't want us to lose any of the facts you said. So call us right back. I'm going to go to the legendary newsman, Mr. Wayne Gilman. Wayne, as it is.
Good
there
evening.
You go. Wayne Gilman. All right. Hear you loud
How's
and clear, Wayne.
How's everybody doing? And I tell you, the thing is, that, you know, when I was listening to your opening a moment ago there, Eric, you know, I was reminded about how in radio back in the day, and I'm assuming it still applies today, that if one person who's in the habit of using the same microphone that everybody else was using during the course of the day, and that one person was sick, and someone neglected to spray or disinfect the studio, how a whole operation could fall apart in the course of one day. And when I juxtapose that with what's going on with these meat factories in the Midwest, you know, I don't know if this is some grandiose design to have vegetarianism implemented legally in this country by killing off all those who are espoused to be carnivores and stuff like that. But it is just amazing. And, you know, we got the gross domestic product figures today. It's at a point now you're talking about, you know, we're slowly going back to where even people who are retired like myself, I think about having to go back to work because of the circumstances in which this man has put us under. And, you know, it's not just a situation. I mean, the racial factor is a given. If one thing this disease has brought out is the imbalance, the unfairness, the inequities of how the system works when it comes to people who are at the very top and those who are at the very bottom. But this one thing, that this disease is so insidious that it doesn't matter who you are, you know. All you have to do is stand in the line of fire and pray that you can survive whatever's coming at you. And that's the thing that I look at. I mean, right after we spoke last week, I think the story came out about the disinfectant. You know, and again, I go back to a point that we talked about a week ago with respect to somebody who lacks the, you know, ability, the facility in which to run the country, even though he went through the electoral process business of checks and balances in this country. Why is it all of a sudden I feel that we're in the midst of a dictatorship, that it doesn't matter? The president suddenly has more power than most. And you could say it's the configuration of the Senate, you know, but, you know, I don't remember anybody ever suggesting, you know, during the course of my lifetime, suggesting that they consume poison to rid themselves, you know, and try to give a cogent argument as to why it should happen, you know? And it just, it baffles me with everything that has gone on. So, you know, it's hard to be patient. Yes, there's light at the end of the tunnel. You know, the discoveries were being made. And then, you know, he's so busy wanting to blame China and the fact that, you know, and this is why we need a press. We need a press, a press that is going to be objective, that is not going to stop at anything, that they're going to be so investigative that they discover every little irresponsible measure that he and his administration has done to bring it out in the open. Because sometimes I look at these poll numbers, it's only now that it's beginning to go down, but it's not going down far enough that he can't come back with some other machination between now and November to seek re-election. And I think rally his troops to say that, you know, maybe at a certain point, let's say August, September, that things will dramatically change, and he will be forgiven for the countless number of American people, black, brown, and white folks, who died at the beginning of this year, needlessly, because he chose to ignore warnings that were given to him months in advance. And that's the thing that really bothers me.
Well, we know the PDA briefing, the presidential daily briefing, he's ignored that. He hasn't read those, and it just came out recently in the Post and Times that the pandemic was talked about in the briefing. But we got Byron back. Byron, once you finish, you were talking about some friends of yours that you've lost. I lost another relative as well.
Yeah, thank you. It really hits home when you know people that you worked with. You know how I always talk about what is a good leader, a good shepherd, a good person who feeds the hungry, clothes the naked, shelter the homeless, heal the sick, and give help to the hopeless. Well, one of those persons was struck by coronavirus last week. And it was a year ago that the family asked me to give the eulogy at the daughter's passing, and now the mother passed away. And it's really heartbreaking because the family has asked me again to do the eulogy, and you got to do it from afar. But it's people like this when you really know how bad and how much that, you know, people work very, very much every day to make people's lives better in Queens, South Queens, New York City. And then the other person was my good friend, Michael Cogswell. Michael Cogswell, for 27 years, was the executive director of the Louis Armstrong House Museum. I've never met a finer person who believes and eat, sleep, and drip diversity and loved Louis Armstrong, protected that house. And I have to salute a person who put their money where their mouth was. Everybody at the staff at the Louis Armstrong House Museum in Corona, Queens, New York, represents one of the cultures that exists in that borough. It's a small staff, but it's so culturally rich and diverse, and we just lost one great leader in Michael Cogswell. Ashe, ashe, ashe.
And we say that ashe to a number of people that we've lost. I have a relative, my mother's cousin, actually, still my cousin, obviously, but when you say that, they're the same generation. She just passed last week as well. So it's hitting a lot of us, and that's the thing, the interesting thing, or that we talked about last week, and probably the week before, is that it's ironic that when the statements and the statistics came out about who was most hardest hit, and it turned out to be disproportionately black and brown people who are essential workers, who have gotten all these jobs within the infrastructure of the government. It's really interesting, if I can go off on a sidetrack there, that for years black people worked to get these jobs. Remember civil service jobs? I remember being a kid, and people were marching to get some of those jobs that the government had, and that the government was at least going to live up to fair hiring practices. You know, when our country was passing all of those rules for fair hiring, the government, being the obviously government, had to live up to the rules. So they were the first ones. So a lot of these essential jobs, as you guys know, subway, toll takers, people work on the subway, people work on drive the buses. One of my great uncles for years was worked on the subway, the transit system, when their union was really powerful and how well they did. And he was one of those members that got all the benefits back in the 70s and was a toll taker and a token taker for years and other train men for other years. And so these are the jobs that most black and brown people have been able to, as you guys know, work within the infrastructure of our society. And hopefully one day, if we keep becoming embedded in the infrastructure, because that seems to be the way people gain power in the society, if we just look at the evolution of the police force and what type of ethnic groups join that, and you look at the evolution of things in the United States, hopefully, and I'm not going to say hopefully, we're going to push towards us becoming firm members of the essential part of society, and then getting to the point where we're making a lot more decisions, and that's where we're at now. The fact that we have all been touched by this virus shows that just yesterday, Mark Muriel and a brilliant doctor from the University of Alabama were on MSNBC, and they had a graphic talking about COVID-19 disproportionately affecting African Americans in these various locations in the country. And so I'm just going to read off some of these numbers. I'm sure you guys are familiar with them. But in Washington, D.C., we're 45% of the population, 75% of the deaths from COVID-19. New York, 9% of the population, 19% of the deaths. Louisiana, 33% of the population, 65% of the deaths. Michigan, 14% of the population, 46% of the deaths. Missouri, 12%, 44%. Wisconsin, 7%. 39% of the deaths, and South Carolina, 27% of the population, and 55% of the deaths. I don't know what the number here in Jersey, but I would assume it's comparable, being that we have a large minority population. So this is really what it's about. And when you talked about how it ends up this way, this goes by design, right? We've talked about before how the Republicans have been designing for years to cut back on entitlements and social programs, and this is a part of their overall design. You know, I was looking at the girl Nicole Wallace or this guy Steve Schmidt. All these Republicans that were part of Bush's administration and worked for John McCain that are now so upset at Donald Trump, but they laid the foundation for a Donald Trump. There's a PBS special that I just want to finish. Just let me finish this point. These guys laid the foundation, and now they themselves have somehow come to Jesus moment to be upset with the Republican Party and Donald Trump's the path that he's taking it down. But you guys laid the foundation. This is what I'm talking about. Democrats need to have a plan that is a decades-long plan, because this other side that we deal with right now, they do the same thing. And clearly they don't care. And go ahead, Wayne, because I want to get into the blue state versus red state thing, but you were going to make a point. Go ahead.
No, I understand what you're saying, and at least they had the decency. I don't know Nicole, but I am familiar with Smith. He used to be at Air America all the time. And once they realized some of the problems that were going on with the structure of the party, at least they had the common sense to get out and leave. You know, I mean,
right.
I'm not a big fan of Meghan McCain, but when I see her talk her political perspective on TV during segments of The View. But the bottom line is that, you know, until these people are respectively touched by something, one issue, any issue, but more importantly, is that you have to look at the substance and the character of a Donald Trump. Because we've had other Republican presidents, the Bushes, Reagan. I'll go back to, you talk about Republicans, I mean, Nelson Rockefeller was far more, you know, there was a time when the party was somewhat balanced and legit. You didn't always agree with all that went on, but there were opportunities, and you could see, but these people have been spellbound by this individual, and there's no reason for it. Anybody who's known this man's history in New York, you know, And I tell you, to be honest with you, I'm sorry for both your losses this week. I lost 7 as of Monday, and since this whole thing started. But I invite every member of the Republican delegation in Washington, D.C., and come walk the streets of New York. Go up to 77th Street off Lexington Avenue and see those refrigerated trucks with dead bodies sitting out there because they can't find a place to put them in a morgue. Come up to Westchester County at Ferncliff Cemetery, where Malcolm X and Dr. Shabazz are buried. And they normally have 12 cremations in one day. 40 yesterday. 40. And the normal figure is 12. They need to see. Unless they draw blood that it individually affects you, I don't think they understand. And all these people staging demonstrations, talking about their rights being taken away, that they would rather, you know, risk dying. I mean, it's just a matter of time before they get hit and subjected to the stuff that we've gotten here in this part of the country. You know, the only reason why it's so severe here is that we're densely populated. That's the problem, you know?
Right.
And that the majority of us, people of color, people from the South and the Caribbean, came here to find opportunities that they couldn't get anywhere else. So, all right? So we got a lock on this bad boy in the 5 boroughs. But the bottom line is, and I'm so proud of Andrew Cuomo, I wish in a way not... No disrespect to Biden, but, you know, every time I watch him, and today he gave the Republicans hell, you know.
Yes.
And I just think that they need to see more of this, of what goes on. You just can't look at New York as some damn fantasy.
Before we go there, Wayne, because I really want to jump into – no, you're getting ahead of it, and I really want us to unpack that blue state, red state, the bailout notion that they're trying to float. But I just wanted to comment, and maybe Byron wants to comment too, I think, and it's always been that. Like you said, come walk a mile, come the empathy aspect, right? That's some of the lines that people give when they talk about we're all in this together and yada, yada, and this and that. And so anybody that's been oppressed or received certain type of oppressive treatment understands oppression, and, you know, usually, right? Anybody that's been wronged usually understands injustice to another individual. So it's about empathy and how people can feel. And if you feel it's – when you have someone who promotes an us-against-them mentality, they're foreign, they're not even human, which is what this country has done for hundreds of years, you know, that's what happens. They don't care. And I think that not only do they not care, that's why I keep going a step further. Clearly, this must be your objective, to have people dying. Because if you see that happening and you turn a blind eye regardless of the facts, regardless of all of the overwhelming things that are available to you to obtain an objective opinion, do you think the world over, all of these millions of people are faking just to fool you and to make Donald Trump look stupid? So if someone still can't get past that notion, then clearly the empathy is not there. And so when you talk about us all being together, United States, then you have to question that. And I'll also go on and question, like when you talk about Nelson Rockefeller and some of those Republicans of back in the day, yes, that the party was more polite seeming, and you had more less extremists, yes, but it was under the auspices of white supremacy, you know. And so when we think about those things, we still have to think about it was still within a society that pushed us down and treated us like second-class citizens as a whole group. Obviously, there are individuals in our ethnic group and every ethnic group out there that have risen up through all of these extra obstacles that life offers us. But for the most part, the supremacy aspect was still being pushed, even though these guys were, you know, a little bit more benevolent in how they pushed it. Ronald Reagan, one of the biggest culprits of that, even though, well, he spoke like someone's grandfather and didn't really mean it, but we know he was one of the main racists, too. So, you know, I mean, that's something to say, yeah, and I appreciate those guys speaking up. You know, I appreciate them speaking up, but they did give us Sarah Palin, and I know that Nicole recognized after a minute that Sarah Palin was all hype, but you did give her a platform. And that's all, and that's kind of something to be remembered, just like Joe Scarborough. Joe and Mika, you guys are all not cool with Donald Trump, but you sure had him on. Let him call into your show anytime he wanted because he was good TV. And that's one of the aspects that, I guess, you know, when we deal with everything in life, there are a whole bunch of factors that come in to cause certain types of behavior. I don't know if you wanted to comment on that real quick, Byron, but I wanted to go ahead.
You know, the thing that I still go back to is the quality of a leader. I think those are questions that we're going to have to answer as a body politic. You ask the question, who will be the one that steps up and steps out? Yes, Andrew Cuomo has done what he's a good showing that what a good leader is all about. The notion of pitting one state against another will bite the butt of every Republican. They have all participated in a scheme that is extremely detrimental to our national security. And once people begin to realize, it doesn't just start with the notion of you're going to build a wall for how much, but you can't even protect your nation's capital. You let the virus come and attack your nation's capital. You can't protect your banking system, Wall Street. You got Wall Street in lockdown. So what kind of leader do we really want in this country? If they can't protect our most crucial cities, how in the hell are they going to protect Tupelo, Mississippi?
Okay? It comes down to answering that question. You let an enemy attack your nation's capital.
He has to be removed. There's got to be some accountability for it.
And you're very if I could jump on, just build on that point, like you're saying, it's going to come back and bite them in the ass, because as it subsides here and travels across the country and they start hitting their waves, you know, red states that want to remain open, it's going to hit them. And this is the notion I've been saying, that what Mitch and the Republicans and Trump's plan, maybe not Trump so much because he kind of stumbled into this seemingly opportunity that I believe that McConnell and the rest of them recognize. Their plan, like I said, is to kill us off, as well as limit the number of votes. They don't want, you know, they don't want the votes. But also too, I think part of their plan is that as it has subsided on the East Coast, right, and they've denied us the funding to help us, and they've done everything to be adversarial and drag their feet, right? When it hits their states, then they're going to be like, okay, we need to rush it now. You know, they're hoping that everything has mostly been worked out because it's been experimented on all of the blue states. So they've worked out the kinks of some sort of form of treatment. So what will happen, what I predict will happen, or kind of, you know, am seeing could potentially happen, or what they could potentially try and do, is that if it hits red states really hard in the upcoming months, I see them trying to cancel some primaries when it becomes disadvantageous for them, if the red states are really becoming, you know, affected as much as we have been up here. You know, let's say they start going through that serious downward spiral where the death rates climb on a daily basis, you know, then they go through that wave that we've gone through here for the last 5 weeks, and it ends up being around August, right, for some of them. Right, July, June, July, August, and then they're gonna say, "Oh, wait a minute, the virus is really hitting us hard in Kentucky, in Tennessee, and all these places where they didn't want to have anything to do with the guidelines, right?" And then they're gonna say, "Oh, we can't vote. It's gonna be how cruel can we be to expose people to danger? Let's postpone the primary, because you know what? By that time." They'd know that Joe Biden is going to be winning. It's going to look like he's going to win. And that's when they're going to try to do another little trick of theirs. You know, if you look
well,
at it.
Winning now.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, not to cut you off, but he's winning now, but and they're aware of that, but they want to make sure that at least, and this is what I'm thinking, in fact, it was in the Huffington Post, I think one of Bush's former speechwriters came out with this theory, this is what's behind Trump's reluctance to go full throttle with the testing business, because he figures if he does everything too soon, you know, he would rather risk losing half the population, even if some of them are members of his own support team, to forward an agenda that would probably level the playing field so that he would have a formidable chance of getting back in there. But, the damage is
let
done.
Let me ask you a question. Wayne, let me ask you a question. You and Eric, two questions. How many people do you think this country is going to end up with in another 30 days of unemployment? Figures. How many do you think? It's already up to 26 million. How many more millions of people are going to be on the unemployment line? And the checks are even for unemployment are late.
Well, you're absolutely right.
That's a fact.
That's what we're
messing with right now. We're messing with a ticking time bomb.
And I've never seen pantry lines in my area like I've seen them this time. I remember 10 years ago at the height of the last recession, and they were comparing that to the Great Depression. But I've never seen people,
where
you know, you go to parts of Southern
jobs?
Westchester, the Bronx,
and the
lines wrapped around the block.
This is the question that's in going to end up really forcing the nation into a position of its own self-destruction if it's not very careful, because this unemployment rate, I don't care how much money you throw at the bailout to people, money is not going to cure
the fact that you don't have jobs. These
exactly.
companies who are making all this money are not hiring, even when they were so-called good times. You mean they only could create 144,000 jobs during Christmas time? What kind of business are you running here?
That's right.
And those were part-time positions. 3 out of 5 people in the unemployment line, 3 out of 5 Americans are hourly employees. This is
and
what
the majority
is destroying.
And the majority of those
and it doesn't even matter what color anymore, because the line is that most of the people were already living below a poverty standard, and now you've pushed them even to a bigger standard of a bigger problem, and that their jobs are not there. There's a potential for this to be upwards of 70 million people in unemployment. 70 million, guys.
And also, when you have taken to the account of, as Cuomo was saying today, with Mitch McConnell and Senator Scott out of Florida, your former governor, we're talking about it's a blue state bailout. You know, Cuomo pointed out very precisely that, well, you know, you're not giving us any money. And also our governor, Murphy, pointed out is that some of the money that's been given to the states and to help with the virus hasn't been given to the states to pay their first responders, to pay the police officers, the fire people. They haven't received that money to help those first responders in the state. And this is the issue. They want to create the chaos. You create the chaos. You throw this society into total chaos. And that and so then everything has to be suspended. We have to stop and get a grip on everything. Because the chaos that we created, we need to get a handle on it, you know? So, I'm the type, you know, from being an actor and being in the movies and entertainment, I'm always trying to figure out where the storyline is going. And one thing that turns me off about a movie or a TV show, if I turn it off soon, is when I could figure the plot out, like in the real beginning. You know, and it's a curse of somebody being in the business, because you kind of, if you're in the business, as you know, Byron, you kind of know writing, and you can kind of see how stuff is written certain ways and where it's going and when they introduce certain characters and that. So you kind of compete that stuff. And so if you're in the business, you got to kind of shake that off and just try to enjoy things. But I'm always trying to figure out the plot line. That's a good mystery, right? It's got you guessing, kind of figure out, well, what's really going on? And when you try to figure this whole thing out, what's really going on? You got to look at all the facts and look at every single clue, like a detective. Like when actors, like when we break down characters, right, Byron, you look at every single clue. Who, what, why, when, and where. Why is this person doing this? What is their objective? How are they doing it? All of those things that we ask as artists will help you figure somebody out for the most part. And so when I look at these actions of these individuals, when these guys talk about blue state bailout, when you break down the facts, which Andrew Cuomo brilliantly did, about how much money each state is giving in terms of how much versus how much they get back. And you spoke about this over a year ago, Byron, about who's putting what into the kitty. And so, talking about the and like you said, Wayne, Cuomo broke it down brilliantly today when he talked about McConnell talking about, New York and the blue state bailouts. And he talked about what if New York puts $29 billion more into the federal budget, federal government, than they get back. Jersey puts $18 billion more than they get back. Massachusetts, 12. Connecticut, 9. California, 6. Now, you notice the trend with those 5 states? Yeah, it might be that they wear the same team color. And the people that put the least amount of money in, right, is what? The amount each state receives from federal government more than they pay in. The number one state is Virginia. They get $82 billion back more than they put in. Maryland, $42 billion more than they put in. Mitch's state, $37 back more than they put in. Alabama, $32 more than they put in. Florida, 30 more than they put in. What's the common theme with all of those Republicans, except for Virginia, that are governors of those states? And the Republican,
and that was close.
And a Republican governor of Maryland who was a reasonable and decent and one of those Republicans that you were talking about, Wayne, that is a pragmatic person that just has conservative values but believes in America, ironically, well, look, his wife is South Korean. So that kind of tells you what his worldview is going to be. He's going to be a little bit more fiscally conservative, like a lot of African Americans could get with that concept of republicanism, but socially liberal. You're a little bit liberal in your social
color.
Right.
You know, he questions on the integrity of the individual.
Eric and Wayne, have you gotten your letter from the White House yet?
Yeah, you know, I'm waiting for that.
No.
Okay, I got one right in front of me. I got one
you're
right
kidding.
In front of me.
No,
did
I'm sorry,
let us say out, or did you, or did you get it?
It's addressed to my fiance from the White House. It's on White House, White House letterhead, dated, with a notice number. It says your economic impact payment has arrived. That's the banner on top of the letter after her address and name and address, and then it says my fellow Americans. It talks about our great country is experiencing an unprecedented public health and economic challenge as a result of the global coronavirus pandemic. Our top priority is your health and safety. As we wage total war on this invisible enemy, we are also working around the clock to protect hardworking Americans like you from the consequences of the economic shutdown.
Oh,
we are fully committed to ensuring that you and your family have the support you need to get through this time. On March 27, 2020, Congress passed with overwhelming bipartisan support the Coronavirus Aid, Relief and Economic Security Act, CARES Act, which I proudly signed into law. I want to thank the United States House of Representatives and the United States Senate for working so quickly with my administration to fast-track this $2.2 trillion in much-needed economic relief to the American people. This includes fast and direct economic assistance to you. That's underlined. And then the next paragraph says, I am pleased to notify you that as provided by the CARES Act, you are receiving, and this is underlined, you are receiving an economic impact payment of $1,200 by direct deposit. We hope this payment provides meaningful support to you during this period. Every citizen should take tremendous pride in the selflessness, courage, and compassion of our people. America's drive, determination, innovation, sheer willpower have conquered every previous challenge. And they will conquer this one too, just as we have before. America will triumph again and rise to new heights of greatness. We will do it together as one nation, stronger than ever before. Signed, President Donald J. Trump.
For my God, that was like one of his briefings.
That's right. For more economic, for more information, check this out. For more information on your economic payment, please visit IRS government coronavirus or call 800 number and blah, blah, blah. And what's really crazy, not only do you get it in English, on the back of it, it's in Spanish too.
Wow.
Now,
you know,
I ask you, at what point did they assume that we were Spanish speaking?
Let me just say something real quick. You know, that's part of, and Byron, you know, we all know that that's part of the Trump promo, you know, the spiel, the bullshit that comes along with it. And what we want to do on this show is we want to attempt to bring, and I was thinking about what our mission is, and our mission is to bring and share something of value, something of benefit, and something of importance to the community that we are a part of and are certainly our listening community. And one of the things we want everybody to understand, and I want to ask everybody to do this and challenge you to always remember this, as well as I challenge all three of us to do this. When we talk about politics, when we talk about Washington, when we talk in a very generic sense, it doesn't help. It's not intelligent enough. We have to be precision-like and pinpoint. So when we talk about Washington and the politicians, talk about the specific politicians, because that's how the public, the masses of Americans, get misled that all of Washington, all of government is no good. And there are people who benefit from that notion, one of them being the man sitting in the White House now. So when we talk about politics and we talk about them in Washington, those politicians, no, we need to talk about the ones that are actually doing the dirt. Don't lump in the good ones with the bad. So when you talk about the politicians, whatever side you may be on, and I don't need to even say this about the other side because they're very good at pinpointing our side and our politicians that are bad and praising theirs that are good. And they don't speak in such broad sweeping terms. And the ones that do, it doesn't make a difference because the ignorance works out for them anyway, seemingly. They keep failing upwards. So we have to understand who's who in the game. Who's on our side? Who's our favorite players? So when we talk about politicians, we talk about government and D.C. No, who are the good guys and who are the bad guys? Do your homework. Don't just get upset about all them down there. They're just, no, know who's who. Because freedom, right, like Malcolm said, is responsibility. Get educated about the facts. Know the facts. So when you go into that booth and you hear these people talking this craziness, you can have knowledge of the subject. I was going to say knowledge of self, but knowledge of self helps because when you educate yourself, you have knowledge of self. But, you know, I don't want to mix all my little metaphors and my educational things, but y'all know what I'm saying. My brother's on the line with me. And so that's the message for the people that we have out there.
No, I hear clearly what you're saying. And in a way, I'm glad that you read that, Byron, because I did hear about it or read about it earlier in the day. And the thing is, he has now politicized an agency that basically should not be even used in that context. You know, exactly. I guess he probably got Kellyanne Conway to write the script. And the deal is just that, you know, he gently weaved through what he felt was considered expedient because it is gained. I mean, the whole aim of giving the $1,200, which is nothing in New York, you know, that okay, please, in the New York minute, that money was gone. But the bottom line is the fact that he was doing it and wants to show his generosity and his understanding that he's trying to identify with the struggles that the average person's going through. But, you know, the bottom line is there was so many inconsistency with that CARES Act that, you know, the Los Angeles Lakers had to return money. I forgot what other company. You know, it's just amazing.
Because of the broad nature of it. I mean, they were legitimately allowed to apply for it, you know, and that's the whole thing, that it was so sweeping and broad in nature, the bill, and that's what I believe the Democrats were trying to get a little bit more responsibility and more accountability for it. And what the Republicans do, in my estimation, and they have no problem in holding America hostage, even in the time of
Russia.
I'm sorry, say it again, Wayne?
No, I was just going to say, at that particular time, if you remember, McConnell wanted to rush it through. Oh, no, we got to do it like this, and blah, 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 and Pelosi doesn't know what she's talking about.
Right. When people are dying, that's when they did it. They did the same thing with 9/11 with a couple of bills. People were dying, and that's when they hold people hostage. It means to tell me you're gonna try and talk about people in New York shouldn't be bailed out and try to make it a political fight when your fellow Americans are dying and from the state that puts more money in than any other state in the country to the federal budget? I mean, we're talking a really devious level of thinking. And these people, you know, that's why I said the Trump and the Republicans, they don't care about Americans. They certainly don't care about black and brown people, and they don't care about Democrats. Because if they did, they wouldn't do the things that they're doing. This guy wouldn't get up there and lie and call it spitball, talking about putting Lysol and injecting, can we do something, and then say, what are you talking to her? And say it was misquoted and the absurdity. I mean, I was misquoted. Everybody was watching you. You're on camera. What are you talking about? You're misquoted. The fact that this guy either is stupid enough or has the stones to try and perpetuate that lie, it's got to raise your eyebrows one way or another. And the fact that there are individuals out there that are so stupid or Trump zombies or whatever that they watch this guy say this and then him to try to come around and say he was misquoted, and then the very next day, which wasn't a briefing, but somebody was in the White House talking. Remember, he was talking to the lady and he was trying to explain it in the Oval Office. Well, you could kind of – and you could just see this guy lying. You could see him when he pointed to the female doctor there and then tried to get her involved in the lie. That reminded me of a scene from a movie. You know,
she had her head down. She didn't even want to
acknowledge what she
said. She
didn't know the deal. She's supposed
to
say, so she's supposed to say, yes, Mr. President, yes, and we've been working. That's that. She's never seen those movies when the guys try to involve their boy in a crime? Come on, lady. You know?
I swear.
But this is what I'm talking about. I swear, this guy is lying to people's face. You can see him lying, and everybody's like, oh, yeah, okay, Mr. Yeah, you're right.
And that's why with all due respect, I mean, the thing is, the man needs to be removed. What is wrong with the system? Why is it that we can't, you know, and there were serious questions being asked about that right after that event. You know, he shut it down the next day when he gave his briefing because he got whiplash by his advisors, who he doesn't listen to anyway. It's amazing that he even listened to them after that, but I guess he realized how stupid he must have looked, you know. But it's just one of those things, man. I mean, this is supposed to be a democratic republic. We are supposed to have the best system in the world, but the system ain't functioning properly, you know. And I don't know. I mean, we have to be patient. I understand it's important that we're only just 6 months away from a meaningful election, and they're already throwing a lot of crap into the game with that now. I hear Jesse Ventura and that turncoat Republican congressman, I forgot what state he was from, announced as an independent today. You know, I mean, we can't afford to even have people like that on the periphery looking to split the vote even more. You know, there's got to be a landslide come November. He has to be removed. He cannot be trusted. You know, he had empirical information from the military intelligence going back to November, and he did
nothing.
Right,
and that's in the presidential daily briefing. The presidential daily briefing going back to November, like you said, that he doesn't read. And they have to give it to him orally twice. Remember, they were saying that maybe he's dyslexic or whatever because he doesn't read, and they have to do these reports to the guy in verbally, or they got to give him stuff with a lot of pictures because he gets distracted. My God, what, this is so ridiculous,
I
man.
I tell you.
And
even
Dr.
orally,
Strange
I think
Love
the only thing that he likes well, I can't say that here anyhow, but, you know, the guy is just...
Hey,
you always make that hard left. You always make that hard left. Just when I think you're driving the boat clear, you always make that hard left, bro. Okay, there you go.
Listen to the questions you just asked of us to try to fathom. Is this guy for real? Is he really?
You know?
Did somebody just see this? Are we? Because you know, we're Eric. You and I are in the business of make believe. We're actors. Okay, we get graded and paid for the value of a good performance, but these are some bad performances.
But you know what? 6 months after this, I'm certain this is going to be fodder for some movie or something after.
Oh, without a doubt.
You know,
I mean, it's like you're saying. You're like, if you're going to lie to me, at least have the respect of me to lie. Give me a good lie. Don't just think I'm. That's when I get pissed off. When you think I'm that stupid, you're just going to tell me anything. Now I'm feeling insulted. I'm going to have to whoop your ass. It's just that you're just being disrespectful. I mean, I feel bad for the Republican people that are following this guy. If you look at some clips on any clip of YouTube or any clip show and you see some of the things that is coming out of these people's mouths, it's like, wow. Wow.
I take the opposite direction of, well, all these nuts that are up there with their guns, they're protesting because they want to go back to work, you know, and they want to spend their money because they got to go to the stores to spend it, you know. But I'm like,
And it's their right. And the hell with everybody else's right. Just want to stay healthy.
But guess what? I don't want none of them to get infected either. So the fact that the president would accept 100,000 people in America to die, that's okay. That's an acceptable number. I'm not accepting even one protester get sick. I don't want because that proves the point. That just proves the point right there. And you got that exactly what happened in Kentucky. Head of a protest is now infected with coronavirus. What do you tell that knucklehead? I'm sorry you got out there and got sick, you know, but that was your right to go out there and get sick. Really?
It is their right to go out there and get sick, but it's not your right to. It's not their right to infect
everybody.
And I'm a little different than you, as you know. I'm a little different as you because, you know, I would be like, oh, well, you got sick.
Drink the Kool-Aid.
Oh,
please,
well.
Go.
You know?
It's one less idiot to
I'd like to
with,
know
right?
what's in their Kool-Aid because I looked Pence yesterday at the Mayo Clinic. And, I mean, the way he comes off, you know, talk about somebody who can act. You know, and I know he has a talk radio history. I'm ashamed to say that he was a member of the union. But the bottom line is that he is such a lapdog for this guy. They have specific instructions that everyone going into that facility has to wear a mask. Why should he be, you know, the exception to the rule? And then he comes out with this thespian portrayal about how he emotionally wanted to show, you know, his concern for all those who've been fighting the good fight. And God only knows if, you know, he said that he gets tested regularly. That doesn't mean anything. You can be rubbing next to somebody who's carrying it, and then you come back positive. You know?
I don't care.
I mean,
I really don't care.
Unbelievable.
24/7, 366 is a leap year. I don't give a damn about his test. What I'm more concerned about is 22 million people, about 30 million people are going to be unemployed next week. I want to know about that. What are you going to do about that? Where are the jobs? Where are the jobs? Where are the checks? How come the check? Oh, the check's in the mail? Is that today's comic relief? The check's in the mail? Well, how about Seattle SLU in the fifth race next week, okay? That's how ridiculous we are talking about right now. It's like, come on, people. You know, we're about to have a third – we're about to have 50 million people unemployed in this country, and you know what that means in our community? Come on.
Please.
Yep.
I don't want to hear it, man. That's what I'm saying.
When the guy talks about he want to look people in the eye, and it's I'm a literal person, like a lot of his simple-minded followers are out, and I'm going to call y'all simple-minded because you're acting simple-minded, not really can if you get mad. But when you tell people, because I wanted to look people in their eyes, you do know that the mask comes up to your nose, does not cover your eyes. So you still would have been able to look them in the eye, Mike. And secondly, or maybe it should be first, this ain't just any old hospital you visit in. It's the Mayo Clinic. And the Mayo Clinic has a reputation. So that seems like it has a reputation for a reason. So that seems like if anywhere you might want to practice social distancing or wearing a mask, it would be the Mayo Clinic, wouldn't it? Because on top of the COVID, they're working on a lot of other diseases that they try to have breakthroughs in. I'm just going by my general knowledge of hearing about the Mayo Clinic. So that would seem to me that would be one of the places that you might want to really wear it, unless you're trying to send a signal to some people. And I guess the signal he was trying to send, well, the president and I should not be afraid to wear a mask, or maybe you're sending the signal, protest, liberate. We're really with y'all. That's why the president is going to make all them kids go up to West Point and get exposed because he wants to stand up there and have an audience to talk to. Let's get off of this real quick, man, but we got another 5 minutes. I'm sure you guys didn't hear in the news that now they're talking about paying the student-athletes.
Oh, really? No.
Now that they're really floating the idea of allowing student-athletes to profit – and to have a appearances and things like that, but it's something that is, it looks like it's going to become a real thing. They're working out the details, and I say it's about time that a lot of these universities that have made millions off of our young black talented athletes start allowing these kids to at least be able to support their families and help support their families and improve the economic status of their families. I don't know what you guys think about that. Obviously, I don't know if you guys have heard about that. I just heard about this on the news a little while ago.
I didn't hear anything about it, but I think it's a good idea as long as it can be regulated. I mean, I you know, it's so funny as you mentioned that. I had a chance to see The Last Dance this past weekend, and I am still astounded. I mean, it's been 30 years already, but, you know, I've always been passionate about the way this guy used to play ball. And the thing is that there's so much talent in our community that comes out. I'm talking about Michael Jordan, of course. But the thing is that you're right. I think they should have some level of monetizing and with instructions that they finish their education. Because a lot of these people, there have been some that, you know, pulled out, you know, went for the big NBA dollar and then decided, well, that's it. God forbid if there's an injury or they can't make the big bucks or they, you know. So, you know, it's fair, but as long as it's regulated, I tend to favor it. Byron.
Well, the concept is not bad. It's the fact that the colleges right now are about to lose over billions of dollars in an industry that's fueled and generated by marketing and commercial activities during these football games, as well as the playoff system. So it's an industry that's as altruistic as that may sound, there's nefarious undertones to this, which engages betting, Las Vegas. We're about to remember, guys, we're about to have a professional football team, the Raiders, be situated in Vegas. I just said this a couple of weeks ago, money laundering and the government depending upon Las Vegas and Wall Street to bail out this president is in serious jeopardy. So dangling a few dollars for athletes to be paid in college, all well and good. Should have been doing it a long time ago. But at what price now are we fueling an industry that's got its fingers and hands in dirty money?
Well, there it is. Byron, you get the last word. But you want to say goodbye to the peoples, brother?
Yes, remember this. Remember this. Register to vote and then use your power because you are the majority. Stop acting like a minority. Don't be the problem. Be the solution. Vote.
There it is. All right, Brother Byron. Talk to you soon. Legendary newsman, Mr. Wayne Gilman, what you want to say to the people to leave them with?
Hey, man, I have my usual sign-off. I just know there were a couple of people I spoke to this week, and I had mentioned I was going to ask you about opening up the phone lines because they've been listening, and I promise, I guess, eventually we'll do that one of these. It's just that we get so carried away, you know. But keep hope alive. That's all I got to say.
All right, there it is from the legendary newsman, Mr. Wayne Gilman. We'll talk to you again next week, if not sooner, sir. This has been the K Sun and Friends, which is an offshoot, or well, not an offshoot, a birthing from from the K Thompson Live Show. My mom up in heaven there. My name is Citizen Payne, the Sun, and we're on live usually 8 to 9 p.m. every Wednesday, and you can also listen to us archived. So. This is it, K Sun and Friends. We'll see you again next week. Connect the dots. Pay attention.